Why, thank you, Jungle Jim, for that wonderful musical introduction. Look at you just cranking it away in that synthesizer. That's right. You know, your fingers move like they're just possessed. They're not even a part of you. They're just a whole nother being that just happens to be right in front of your wrist. But boy, you really got that synthesizer cranking out. Hi, this is Tim Marr. That's Jungle Jim, our musical director. And yes, this is Failing Up, recording this podcast in a basement studio, all located along the shores of the chilly, frigid Seneca River, flowing all the way up to the Great Lake, Chilly Lake of Ontario, feeding that mighty St. Lawrence Seaway past 1,000 islands and around the world, just like my voice. Like that, Jungle Jim? If you make a left on that Great Lake of Ontario, you're going to find yourself heading towards Buffalo, New York, and Toronto, Canada. Two wonderful cities and worth a trip to visit if you've never been there. Somehow you get on Lake Erie and you hit and find yourself on another Great Lake of Erie. And from I'm leery of Erie, Jungle Jim. I'm leery of Erie. But from Lake Erie, you can find yourself over on Michigan, Huron, Superior, just those great, wonderful inland oceans. And they are huge. Let me tell you, they're big, great. No. They're not big lakes. They are great lakes. Wonderful great lakes. How are you doing there over Jungle Jim? Okay? You awake? Yeah? You enjoying the winter season? Because it is, recording this podcast, as I said, but it is cold and chilly out up here. Darkness comes early and the chill and the breath of winter is blowing upon us up here as we occasionally are getting some snow, but it's still chilly in the air. Good for comfort food. We talked about comfort food, talked all about it, and ate a lot of it. Can barely fit into my pants. Oh, maybe these aren't my pants. Are these your pants? I think I'm wearing your pants. I think I got into your pants. Anyway, wow, I gotta tell you. As I progress through this world, as I walk through this world in life, and I journey through life, and the days behind me are longer than the days ahead of me, and I guess I'm in the autumn portion. Or if I'm not in the autumn portion, it's not peak foliage yet, but it's dark, gosh darn autumn. But there were always constants in my life, always constants in my life. There was something that was always there, something you could always count on, something that was always kind of like a touchstone, a gentle voice, but a friend at the same time. And no matter if it came to your home once a week, and I believe on Thursdays, or if you ran into your friend in various stores and bookstores, or way back in the day, drugstores, where they just listed all of these magazines, every week since 1954, people looked forward to the cover of Sports Illustrated, the magical cover of Sports Illustrated. The sacred covers of Sports Illustrated and the stories and the wonderful photographs inside of Sports Illustrated. And that magazine became part of our culture. That magazine became Americana. But Sports Illustrated was more than sports. Sports Illustrated was a place where you could go to escape. Even people, some people who didn't even like sports, loved Sports Illustrated. You could love it for the photography. You could love it for the depth of some articles and the different perceptions. If you were a kid in high school, you'd like to see Meet the Teens. Remember Meet the Teens and Sports Illustrated. You want to see who's really a star in the world, depending on the major event that was happening. But it didn't just cover basketball and football. It did, believe me, and it covered them wonderfully. And I originally subscribed to Sports Illustrated as a little kid in 1967 because of my passion for football, mind you. But what I realized quickly was that every week a different cover came, whether it was gymnastics or the Olympics or horse racing or anything, but it just took you places that. It was the wide world of sports in a magazine that came to your house if you subscribed every weekend. If you didn't, there it was in the store, Sports Illustrated. And of course, there was the infamous for every young man in America and every older man in America who hated to admit it, and behind dark shadows and dark corners, hidden in in the rooms and the closets of their homes, and hidden in the back seats of their cars, and buried under mattresses or taken to work and wherever you want to take them, there was the infamous annual Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. I'll tell you, and that was like big news. There was always the big championship in football, and then there was the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. Everybody looked for who was going to be the cover. And it made careers. If you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, the model, Cheryl Teague, made your career. Ellie McPherson, made your career. Christie Brinkley. And as a kid, you looked at that magazine and said, wow, how am I going to unstick these pages? Yeah. But then you just, and believe me, the one thing about the Sports Illustrated magazine edition, nobody looked at that magazine for the articles. And if they did, I'd call bullshit, but they didn't. Nobody. But there was the annual sport, and it wasn't even viewed as offensive. I don't think it was viewed as offensive. I don't know. Hell, one of the last ones, Martha Stewart's on there in her early 80s, and I got to say, she looked good. But in any event, Sports Illustrated, first published in August of 1954. Sports Illustrated was first published when Ike Eisenhower was president of the United States. And now Sports Illustrated is going away and being buried. Buried in 2024. It was 1964 when the first edition of the swimsuit edition, when the swimsuit edition came out. There you go. So that is your Jungle Gym. Jungle Gym, wake up. Yet you can look all you want. There are no swimsuit editions in this studio, Jungle Gym. Get back on your synthesizer. Get your mind, get your head in the ball game. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But anyway, 1964, big year, the Beatles, is when the swimsuit edition first hit. But it was a constant. It was a touchstone. No matter what was going on in that week, if my report card sucked, if you were getting chased by a bully, if the teacher chained you to a desk, or if it was a bad day in school, or, you know, Phyllis Johnson checked no in the "Would you want to be my girlfriend" box. No matter what happened that week, no matter what happened, you know, dog chewed your underwear. Dad's looking for a couple beers that are missing out of the fridge. Who knows? Whatever happened that week, you always had Sports Illustrated. Always had it. Your friend that took you around the world and covered more than sports. 1972, the Munich Olympics, it was Sports Illustrated that wrote in-depth articles about the tragedy and the hostage and the killing in Munich in 1972. I mean, Super Bowl editions, World Series editions, Olympics, tracks, baseball, you know, sportsman, then sports person of the year. Huge, huge. Who's going to be the sports person of the year? You have Time Magazine's person of the year, and you have Sports Illustrated's sports person of the year. Jockeys, gymnasts, figure skaters. It was all there. Wonderful photography. And myself, my three best friends, and I had many friends. One of my best friend in the world, Pete Masters, and I know other people, would cut up that magazine at times, cut the pictures out, the great pictures, and that would be the wallpaper in our bedrooms. I shared a bedroom with my brother, and I think he hated it, but what are you going to do? My friend Pete Masters, same thing. His room was just wallpapered with pictures from Sports Illustrated. You just took them and you taped them on your wall. And a whole side of our bedroom was just sports. In my case, it was football, just Sports Illustrated football. I wish I hadn't cut them up at this point. And the iconic covers with the font, Sports Illustrated. And the myth of the covers, the myth. If you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you were jinxed. You didn't want to be the team that got on Sports Illustrated before the Super Bowl or the World Series. Or you didn't want to be the player that got on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Boxing, our constant companion. Companion. A star in the flag, almost. Gone. Poof. Poof. Gone. No more. No more will Sports Illustrated, my dear friend, be sleeping on our coffee table. No more will I wake up in the morning and see that wonderful cover there, knowing that everything's okay, but there's still a Sports Illustrated. You know? There's still that iconic lettering. There's still a picture, and sometimes I didn't care what the picture looked like. But now it's gone. And with it, like with every piece of nostalgia or anything, it stirs memories. Because each one of those issues of Sports Illustrated, if you were born in 1955 and you're still alive, marks a period in your life, you know. I reached puberty with Sports Illustrated. And I took advantage of puberty with Sports Illustrated. You know, but Sports Illustrated was, I'm saying it a lot, but it was just paralleled so much. Elvis Presley's musical career started with Sun Records. Now, his first hit, Heartbreak Hotel, came out 2 years later, but in 1954. The world was starting to change when all these things were happening. Rock and roll was becoming rock and roll in 1954 or 55. with Elvis Presley and Little Richard, you know, Buddy Holly, you know, music. And it's ironic because you had the music scene coming about. It was the birth of music and it was the birth of this magazine at the same time, paralleling each other. Entertainment and athletics paralleling each other. And at the same time, now mark my words, at the same time, television was also coming into its own. So you had this perfect storm of this wonderful rock and roll rebellion music coming out, fantastic music. The voice of the youth, Satan's music coming out. Elvis Presley, wiggling those hips, moving into Buddy Holly and on and on to the Beatles and the Stones and all those other bands. And then you had television coming into its own. 1955, it was really starting to, you know, kick in. And then you had this magazine, all of these things happening at the same time. And as they paralleled each other and got to later on, I was born, for God's sakes, there's a cultural phenomenon. But later on, not only did they parallel each other, the three of these entities going in, but television eventually made football. Professional football was designed for television. And that became apparent, I believe, in the 1958, I think it was 58, not 59, the 1958 championship game. Some call it the greatest game of all time, but it's hard to say. The Colts winning the championship game over the Giants in overtime. Alamichi's over the goal line. Alamichi scores a touchdown. But the Colts beating the Giants in a playoff game, and it was televised, and there it is. Right there, the television and professional football, the relationship was consummated. Look out, baseball, because the party's over. Those two entities were made for each other, and it's proven to this point. And at the same time, rock and roll music comes into play, big time into play, in the 60s. And as the 60s evolve and the music takes over and becomes culturally influential, and television becomes really culturally influential, both of them, they're all growing, we're all growing up together. Rock and roll music, television, and athletics are all changing at a rapid pace. The AFL and the NFL and Joe Namath, television in the Vietnam War and fantastic sitcoms and rock and roll and the Beatles. In 1964, the first edition of the swimsuit comes out. 1964, February 7th, the Beatles land in the United States of America, and they perform at Sullivan on February 9th, probably like a week after the swimsuit edition. What a week that was. Oh, my God. Rock and roll and screaming. And they were all supporting each other. The music was driving. The news was driving. And athletics were driving. And athletes were starting to make statements. The AFL and Joe Namath and long hair and pantyhose commercials and white shoes and black fists in the 1968 Olympics on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They all came together. They all supported one another. They all created a culture, a creative, informative, cool. It was pretty darn cool culture. And that culture continued, and that culture continued to grow. We're to this day and age in 2024. Jungle Jim, are you taking notes? This is like a history lesson. By golly, in 2024, when you see a professional football game, when you watch the Super Bowl in 2024, it's about, 60% football game and 40% entertainment, 40% music, entertainment, commercials are entertainment. The television commercials are just as important as the game. Boom. Everybody said, why do you watch the Super Bowl? I watch it for the commercials. I love the commercials. And all the stuff you used to miss in the Super Bowl, all the stuff you used to miss while that was going on, you could read it in Sports Illustrated and they'd kind of give you the inside scoop, you know? They take it to a level where you wouldn't be, and they would paint a portrait of what actually happened that you missed on television. And these entities all supported one another and all grew up. And at the same time, while they grew up, a whole generation of baby boomers, the generation that screwed everybody over, I guess, I don't know. But they got it all. Now we're sucking Social Security right out of the veins of our treasury. But in any event, We all grew up together. We all grew up with rock. Not all of us, but a lot of us. And now it's gone. One leg off the stool is gone. And you know what happens when one leg off the stool is gone? Yeah, you better have some good balance. And it's sad. You know, it's sad. And if you're smart, you know, Sports Illustrated is the Hess Trucks of magazines. You want to save that magazine. Save those covers. I have a couple frame covers right here somewhere. Yeah, they're great. Dr. J and the ABA on the cover. Larry, you know, Dr. J. Duncan and saying, take that, Boston. Wow. They were just great, great headlines. Wonderful. And it's a sad time for the, and it's a loss and it's a mourning. But whenever we lose something that is part of our culture and is part of our experience here on the planet, something that was always there, it's sad because I don't know what it makes you realize when those things, it's sad. And is melancholy sad, Jungle Jim, or is melancholy just like you reminisce a little too much and you get a little down in the dumps? I don't know. But it gets to the point where you're thinking, what, you feel the loss, you know, you start to feel the loss of days gone by, but you do. And it, you know, it just gets a little, you know, your friend's not there anymore, you know. Some of us will just miss the swimsuit edition. I hear you, Jungle Jim, but this is Tim Moore. That's Jungle Jim. This is Failing Up. Bye-bye.